The Ogre and the Sword. The air was cool and alive tonight in the kingdom of Back, as if all this land had taken in a deep breath, stirring at the return of their princeling. The west wind caressed us, delighted by Hyacinth's presence, and Hyacinth smiled at its touch, tilting his face up so that the wind could kiss his lips. As I followed him through the trees, I wrapped my arms tighter around myself, shivering beneath my lace and velvet. My dress dragged along the ground, picking up bits of dirt and grass.
Hyacinth! Hyacinth!
The fairies called as we went, dancing excited circles of blue light around their princeling.
He's here!
They drew close to him, kissing his cheeks and skin affectionately, but he waved them off, his breath fogging in the midnight air.
Away tonight, loves, he cried, gripping my hand. I have my Fräulein with me.
I couldn't help but smile, secretly pleased by his singular attention. The fairies hissed their disapproval at me, scattering as Hyacinth waved his hand at them, and then coming back together to tug sharply at my hair. I scowled, batting them away.
You must be firm with them,
he said to me, the glow of his eyes reflecting against his shoulder.
It is hard for fairies to understand subtlety.
We paused in the middle of a clearing in the forest. Here I gasped aloud. The twin moons of the land hovered at either end of the clearing's sky, where the tree's roots reached up against the night. The moonlight illuminated the stalks of Edelweiss that filled the field, painting them all in a silver-white glow. I had never seen so many flowers in my life. They carpeted the entire clearing, transforming it into a scene of snow. Overhead, the sheet of stars was so brilliant that they seemed to be raining stardust down upon us. Hyacinth smiled at my awe.
Look closer. Aren't they lovely?
When I peered more closely at the flowers, I realized that their glow did indeed come from a thin layer of glittering white dust that coated them. When the moonbeams cut through the forest around us at just the right slants, I could see it. The shine of dust in the air, floating gently down by the millions. And when I looked down at myself, my arms and dress were sprinkled with starlight. I smiled and, on impulse, leaned down to touch the shimmering Edelweiss growing around me. Each time my fingers brushed their petals, a note sang out, so that running my hand through them sounded like a soft chime of bells. I closed my eyes for a moment to savor the sound. Hyacinth turned his face up toward the stars. They seemed to lean down toward him in response.
The princeling, came the whisper, echoing around us.
Why are we here? I breathed, mesmerized. He took my hand, then pulled me toward him, pressing his palm against the small of my back. I blushed at the warmth of his skin against mine.
Because I'm taking you up to see the stars, he replied.
A peal of bell-like laughter answered from above, and a moment later, a dozen threads dropped from the sky. Upon their ends were silver hooks that winked in the night, each one's curve large enough for a person to sit upon. Hyacinth grabbed the one nearest to us, tugging twice on it, and up in the sky a star winked back. He lifted one foot to press down against the hook, as if to test it. Then he pulled me up with him so that we stood together on it. I started to open my mouth, but my words scattered to the winds as the hook suddenly yanked up, slicing us through the cool air in a shining line. The forest shrank into a mass of tiny limbs below us. I squeezed my eyes shut. Hyacinth laughed at me as my arms tightened in panic around his waist. When we finally stopped moving, and the pit of my stomach had settled, I hesitantly opened my eyes. The forest was gone,
The meadow had long ago vanished somewhere far below us. We now stood on a hook, suspended in a world of clouds, white wisps drifting around us in a mist. Overhead, the stars that I had always seen as dots were now bright balls of light, blue and gold and scarlet, a sheet stretching to infinity in every direction. They looked so close, I thought I could reach out and pluck them from the sky. The bell-like laughter echoed from somewhere overhead, and I looked up to see the line of our hook disappearing around the top of a glowing star hovering right above us.
"Starfishers,"
Hyacinth said.
"They like to tempt the gullible, who always take their bait. Then they pull them up into the sky and dangle them there for weeks on end, taunting them until they let them back down again."
He smiled when I shied away from the sharp hooks.
"But they will not harm their princeling. Or you," he added.
Still, I noticed him ducking instinctively away from the burning balls of light overhead, as if afraid that the stars might scorch him.
"Come."
He stepped off the hook and leapt onto the soft blanket of clouds below us, then held his hand up to me. I took it, stepping down too. The clouds felt like moss made of air between my toes.
"I brought you up here so that you can see what I need," he said.
We walked over to the edge of the clouds. Here, Hyacinth lowered into his usual crouch, while I lay down on my stomach to peer over the side. He swept a hand out toward the world under us. My gaze followed his gesture to the landscape below, where the expanse of forest spread out beneath us like a darkly woven rug, its edge cut by a ribbon of white sand and the still silver ocean beyond. I recognized the shore where the witch's grotto of nightflowers had been. Edelweiss covered every field and clearing in sight, their snow-white patches billowing like magic under the moonlight. It was an untouched land, strange in every way, but recognizable too. Here and there, I saw a coastline peeking through the clouds that reminded me of the boundaries of Europe I'd seen on maps. The sight so surprised me that I tugged on Hyacinth's hand. "There," I gasped.
"Everything here is backward,"
he smiled.
"The kingdom is a mirror of your world."
A mirror of our world. My eyes roamed across the rolling land. In the northern regions, I could see fires lighting hearths in a village buried in the snow, golden menorahs in their windows. In the east, a massive field of soldiers in blue and white charged across a plain, their movement like the ripple of a flag. I looked on elsewhere as a line of young women, their limbs bound, stood on the gallows as guards held torches to their feet. And far out, where the land shifted to an endless expanse of black ocean, ships as small as dots sailed from the shores in pursuit of the new world. "How is it a mirror?" I asked him.
"When you hold an image up to a mirror, you see every detail of that image exaggerated. Things happening all around you that you might have missed in your everyday life."
He nodded down toward the ships crossing the Atlantic Ocean.
"Look hard enough, Fräulein, and the kingdom will show you every truth that your world doesn't."
A new wind blew past, numbing my fingers and toes. I turned my gaze back down to the mirrored world. Dots of dark red blood stained the ship's decks, and the snow piled against the village houses' charred windowsills. Fire consumed the gallows, and cries came from the battlefield. Every truth. I swallowed hard, but my eyes stayed on the scene, determined to remember it. Hyacinth's hand stopped. There, the forest ended abruptly at the banks of a river that encircled the entirety of a castle and its surrounding cluster of villages. "The castle on the hill," I whispered.
A massive jungle of black thorns grew on either side of the river, unbreakable and unrelenting, a wall separating man from forest. No lights flickered in the villages. They were abandoned and empty. On the hilltop, the castle loomed, its dark stones decaying. And just as in the story I'd told Vulfril on his sickbed, dark, phantom figures floated around the castle's tallest tower, their wispy trails visible even from here.
"I wanted you to see the full expanse of our world," Hyacinth said when I looked expectantly at him. "It was not always so. The kingdom was once prosperous, in harmony with the land around it. After the queen's death, though, the king ordered the thorns grown around the river and cut it off from the kingdom within."
I looked down to see the guard towers dotting the length of the river. They looked long abandoned, just as the villages had been, their turrets overgrown with thorns and black ivy. In the river itself swam something enormous and sinister, its fins billowing out of the dark water.
"You are the Lost Prince," I said, turning to him.
His eyes had a faraway look now as he stared at the castle.
"Over time, I have grown up with the fairies, and each year I spend with them, I become more like them."
"Do the thorns keep you away from the castle?"
"The thorns and the river," he replied sadly. "That is what I need your help with. There is an old sword so sharp that it can cut away the thorns around the castle. This sword can only be found in an estate."
Here he paused to point out a house in a crescent-shaped clearing in the woods.
"Where a great ogre lives. He wears nothing but black, so he blends into the shadows. And if he finds you stealing his sword, he will slay you where you stand."
I looked at him in horror.
"An ogre?" I asked. "You expect me to get past such a creature?"
"You survived the Queen of the Night, didn't you?"
Hyacinth looked at me with his glowing eyes.
"I have tried to reach the sword before, but the ogre has a particular nose for those of us from within the Kingdom of Back. He can smell the wind and night on me. You, though, are from another world, and he cannot recognize the scent of that world on you."
I turned my attention back to the house in the clearing. Ivy draped its walls, while a puff of smoke floated lazily up from the home's chimney. Not a single light glowed from the windows. I tried to imagine what the ogre would look like when he turned his eyes down toward me.
"We have a bargain,"
Hyacinth said to me as he tilted his head.
"Can I trust you?"
I nodded. "I will do it." He smiled at me warmly. As he did, a breeze picked up, combing its delicate fingers through my hair before it turned to blow in the direction of the ogre's home.
"The west wind will carry you there," he said to me. "The ogre sleeps very soundly, and if you keep your wits about you, you will find the sword without waking him and return on the wind's back before he is any wiser."
I tucked my nightgown tightly under my legs as the wind blew harder, the breeze turning into a gust until it finally lifted me from the clouds. I wanted to cry out, but all I could do was look back once at Hyacinth before the wind bore me away from the sky and swept me downward across the nightscape. The ogre's house was so quiet that the wind dropping me in the silver clearing sounded deafening to my ears. I crept toward the entrance, my heart pounding. The door itself was slightly ajar, as if the ogre knew that there was no one in the kingdom who would dare steal from him. Still, I stood there, unable for a moment to will myself to do it. What if I went in and never returned?
Why would Hyacinth trust me with such a task?
But then I remembered the warmth of his smile, the promise between us.
If I completed this task, I would have only one more to finish my end of the bargain. It would bring me that much closer to Hyacinth fulfilling my wish.
The world around me seemed to surge in response to my battling thoughts.
I turned sideways, barely slipping through the open door, and disappeared into the shadows inside the house.
The home was a wreck. Broken things littered the lower floor, the seat of a large stool, the shattered porcelain from a former cup, an enormous table missing half of one leg, as if it had been chopped clean off.
Cobwebs draped the inside of the fireplace, the wood in it layered with dust.
A half-eaten loaf of hard bread sat on the kitchen counter. Even a rat had decided the bread was not worth taking, a few half-hearted nibbles visible on the edge of the crust.
There was no sword to be seen anywhere. A gentle snore from the upper floor sent a tremor through me. I hurried into the shadows by the stairs before looking up. The steps were each twice as tall as the ones I knew in our home along the Geizhardgasse, their middles sagging as if used to bearing a great weight. I waited until the snores were even. Then I climbed up the steps one at a time.
They led into a bedchamber strewn with old clothes, open drawers, and discarded armor. I could hardly see anything in the darkness, except for a shapeless mass lying in the enormous canopy bed, obscured behind translucent black drapes. From inside it came the snores, each so loud that it seemed to rattle the floorboards.
The sword! I looked at each discarded piece of armor on the ground. A breastplate covered in old grime, a dented arm guard, a shield emblazoned with a magnificent burning sun on its rusted surface, a forgotten belt, the scabbard at its side, empty. What if Hyacinth was wrong, and there was no sword here at all? A particularly loud snore made me jump and whirl to face the bed. The figure behind its drapes stirred, rolling onto its side with a sigh that sounded half-labored, half-mournful, a sound full of tears. The creature was enormous, a fearsome shadow in the night that blocked out the moon. As it moved, something metal glinted in the dim light. It was the sword, its hilt in the ogre's massive clutches, steel still sharp enough to cut a line in the bed's sheets. The ogre suddenly gasped, and I ducked to the floor, certain he'd awakened and seen me crouching here. He asked a question I couldn't understand, then continued muttering to himself without waiting for an answer. A dream. As he shifted again, he let out another strangled gasp and sighed.
"I've searched for years," he muttered this time,
and in his voice was a song of mourning, the ache for summer when winter has already settled in.
"Where are you?"
Hyacinth had been afraid of this ogre, and so was I. But even monsters must dream of fears and wants. And the sadness in his voice drew me closer. Now I could see the faint outline of his face in the night. What I'd imagined as the jutting jaw and ivory fangs of a beast, I now saw was a thick beard, aged and unkempt.
"Where are you?"
he repeated. Something told me I should answer. So I did. "Here," I whispered. He stilled, then turned his closed eyes toward the window in my direction. I froze.
"I heard you,"
he said, wonder seeping into his voice. His lips, hidden beneath that hard beard, tilted into a hopeful smile.
"There you are. Are you near the trees?
I crept silently around his bed until I was on his other side.
Yes, near the tree line, I answered.
Ugh,
he exclaimed and turned to face me again, still asleep, his hands shifting against the sword's hilt. His fingers twitched.
Are you safe?
Who was he searching for, I wonder? I cleared my throat, then dared to step closer.
I am safe, I replied, although there is a great beast here, right across the river. Lend me your sword so that I may fend him off.
The smile wavered, and the ogre's brows knotted. He hesitated, his grip still tight on the sword's hilt.
It is very heavy. Will you be able to wield it?
I can, I said, creeping closer. I stood right at the edge of the black drapes now, my hands poised near his. From here, I could see all the sword's details, its red pommel stone and the fine curls of writing etched into its blade.
You will just need to throw it a bit farther.
He murmured again, his voice too low for me to catch. Then, suddenly, his fingers loosened against the hilt.
Now,
with a surge of strength born of panic, I reached past the drapes and toward the hilt, my hands grasping it right as his hands started to close around it again.
What is this?
He grumbled, his brows knotting deeper above his eyes. I yanked the sword out of his loose grip before he could move again. The weight of it surprised me, and instead of pulling it to me, I stumbled and dropped the blade with a loud clatter on the floor. The ogre, startled, stiffened, and grew quiet. His eyes fluttered open. I did not hesitate. I scrambled forward and hoisted the blade with both hands, then half ran, half stumbled toward the stairs. Behind me, I heard the bed groan as the ogre shot up and let out an angry snarl.
What are you doing in my house?
He growled. I didn't look back. I rushed down the stairs, the blade bouncing heavily at my side, my arms already aching from carrying it. Heavy footsteps landed one after the other behind me. The door was wide open now, blown askew by the wind, and I struggled to move faster. A hand landed on my shoulder, yanking me backward. I cried out in terror.
There you are, thief,
he said. I shut my eyes tight and tried desperately to pull away. A great wind surged underneath me then, and when I opened my eyes, I saw every window in the house blow open, the ogre falling backward as the west wind came to my aid. It carried me up into its embrace again, and then, as I clutched the sword closer to me, it lifted me out through the door and up into the sky. A strangled cry of fury came from the ogre as he raced out into the clearing. When I looked over my shoulder, I saw him standing there, his figure growing steadily smaller. His face turned toward me in shock and rage, the woods and river and land around him turning back into blankets of darkness and silver ribbons. I trembled all over. The sword in my hands glinted in the night, reflecting starlight as the wind carried me up, up, back up to the clouds where Hyacinth waited. His eyes brightened in delight when he saw me.
How brave you are, my Fräulein,
he said, taking me into his arms and kissing my hands. He marveled at the sword.
Very well done.
I smiled, but the memory of the ogre's dream lingered like a ghost in my mind, keeping me from feeling pleased. Do you know anything about the ogre? I asked Hyacinth, as he ran a long finger down the sword's blade.
Oh?
Hyacinth said idly. I told him about the ogre's dream, the way he stirred and startled and called out in fear.
Who was he searching for that he wanted to find so badly? I said.
Hyacinth's glowing eyes found mine, and for a moment he straightened, touching my chin once.
"The ogre hungers for flesh," he explained in his wild, gentle voice. "He hunted the kingdom's villagers when they still lived here. All feared him. The ogre was surely dreaming of his hunt and how to devour it."
He shook his head.
"It's a terrible thing to talk about. Let's keep it between us, Fräulein."
I thought about the way the ogre had tossed me his sword when I seemed in distress. It was not the response of a hunter to his prey. Still, I nodded and said nothing. Hyacinth was pleased, and I had fulfilled another part of my side of our bargain. Neither the grief of an ogre nor the crown emblazoned on his shield was something I was here to dwell on.